This is Gutcast. The conversation around stomas is a hugely important one for those living with IBD, and I am looking forward to having an open, honest, and much needed discussion about it on today's episode. I would like to welcome our three guests, Professor Anthony O'Connor, gastroenterologist at Tally University Hospital Dublin, Michaela Hayes, iRadio presenter who lives with a stoma, and Kathy Walsh, a colorectal clinical nurse specialist at Letterkenny University Hospital, Donegal. Anthony, can I start with you? For those of us who might not be familiar with stomas and surgery just yet, can you talk us through why somebody might get a stoma or possibly have surgery? And then I suppose the different types of stomas.
Okay, so it's important, I suppose, to remember that stomas serve a number of functions for patients with inflammatory bowel disease. They can be, to an extent, curative, or they can be with a view to helping somebody through a difficult period of time, or they can be with a view to, you know, a semi-permanent solution. All right. So the two main types of stomas somebody with IBD might have would be an ileostomy or a colostomy. Okay, so an ileostomy is when the stoma is made out of the small bowel, and a colostomy is when the stoma is made out of the large bowel. Okay, so an ileostomy would be a common operation that somebody with Crohn's disease might have done. And it's also a commonly performed procedure in ulcerative colitis, when somebody might have, let's say, their whole colon removed and a loop of the small bowel brought up to the skin, and that's how the waste leaves your body. A colostomy would be done less frequently. It might be done for patients who develop a bad colitis in a particular segment of bowel, or let's say somebody who might develop a bowel cancer or something like that might have a colostomy. That's a little bit different. So that's when the colon, basically the large bowel, is brought out and stitched to the skin. So I suppose the difference there would be an ileostomy. The contents would be sort of the consistency of sort of porridge. They'd be gloopy, generally, or maybe watery even contents. Whereas a colostomy, depending on where in the bowel it is and how much of the large bowel has been removed or defunctioned, would tend to be sort of more like formed stool. All right. They can be temporary or they can be permanent. So in a sort of a setting where somebody might have a temporary ileostomy would be, let's say, when somebody's got very, very bad Crohn's disease in their rectum or in their perianal region or something like that, that we might put the stoma up for a few months to let things heal, to get somebody on the right prescription, to get somebody on the right road again, with a view to eventually what we call restoring continuity. So taking the stoma down and having you with a normal functioning bowel again. Or it might be on a more permanent basis, let's say, for somebody who's got very, very bad disease of the colon, who might have exhausted all their medication related options. And really, a stoma is the best way to restore quality of life as quickly as possible. So the types of people, it could be somebody coming in an emergency situation, very, very sick, having to have a stoma done as an urgent procedure, or it could be the end of a longer period of maybe failing to get the disease under control, when a stoma might be the right thing to do. So there's loads of circumstances where we might put one on.
And it is the motto of Gutcast that once you've met one person with IBD, you've met one person with IBD, and no two journeys are the same. Michaela, can you bring us back to your diagnosis?
Mine was quite complex. It took 10 years for me to get a diagnosis, but I was so lucky. I had such a good GP. My GP was absolutely amazing. And he was like, no, it's definitely this. So I've had every test you can imagine done, everything. And I remember at one stage, I started thinking, I was like, I'm imagining this. Maybe all bodies do this. Maybe everyone bleeds from the back passage. Maybe it's normal to cry every time you go to the toilet. And actually, funnily enough, the day before I got diagnosed with Crohn's, in this 10-year journey, a consultant did come up and say, I don't think there's anything wrong with you. I think you just have a lazy bowel. Because I had surgery the Monday, and they were like, no, didn't see anything, you're fine, sent me home. It was a day procedure. The third day I was so sick, so I was put in as an inpatient. The professor went off, had a look, said, yeah, it was Crohn's disease. And then the GI team as well actually met up, because it's Crohn's disease and ulcerative colitis that I have, which is just a double D doozy of it. But I'm so happy when I found out. I was crying and she was like, oh, I know. And I was like, no, these are happy tears. She was like, are you okay? I was like, this, I have been doing this since I was 17. I was 27 at this stage and I didn't have an answer. So it was, to get an answer was amazing. 6 years on from getting diagnosed, I ended up getting my little ostomy, my little Paloma the stoma, as I like to call her, the day Ireland shut down because of the pandemic. It's all very dramatic.
I can only imagine what that experience was like, because it was like no other, you know. Yeah. Like, you had a very unique experience. It's, I'm sure, quite, it can be for a lot of people in a way a lonely or terrifying journey in itself. So to have that added COVID element brought into it, where I'm sure you probably did, I don't know if, how early this stopped people coming into the hospital, but you may not have been able to have that support system around the way you usually would have had.
So I went to sleep. My granny came in with me. I went to sleep. Then I woke up and they came into me and they were like, there's no visitors allowed into the hospital. The hospital is shut down. And I was like, what? Cried on the phone to my granny for 3 hours. But I will tell you this, the other five ladies in the ward with me, we became the best of pals because we didn't have anyone else. We didn't have people who could come in and bring us chocolate and bring us whatever. So I was the joker. Like, we became like a little family, and I would not change that experience for anything in the world. It was phenomenal. It was the best support anyone could have going through something like that. It was just like, out of experiences and how they go, it was probably one I'll never forget for the rest of my life. It was so lovely.
It's great to have that memory to look back on your experience, isn't it? Kathy, a nurse like yourself with a specific care and role to play within stoma surgery, can you talk us through that initial conversation that you might have with somebody who is set to have stoma surgery?
So sometimes, you know, the thought of stoma surgery and the uncertainty and the fear factor and not knowing what's ahead. And it's really, really important, you know, sort of that IBD nurses who are in touch with people with inflammatory bowel disease. And, you know, they're the first people that are going to maybe initiate the first conversation because they're under your care. You can see that maybe the treatment's not working, and that's a very important step. But then going forward, being involved with the multidisciplinary team meetings with the surgeons, or some centres have joint clinics, and that would be the first initiation, you know, about deciding if treatment would be the way forward for somebody. At those multidisciplinary team meetings, you know, there would be a stoma care nurse, and that first meeting is, you know, it's the preparation for, you know, the end result of having surgery. And, you know, a stoma care nurse then can talk about, you know, the type of stoma, you know, the function, the lifestyle associated with that, and address any fears. The stoma care nurse then can talk about, you know, the location of where a stoma would be. And that's something that's done with the patient. It's not something the nurse decides alone. And that's all part of the preoperative education. And it is a key factor to have this information before surgery, because what you want to do is become the master of the stoma. You want to know what the appliances look like, how they're going to feel in your body. Maybe try them out before you actually have your operation. Feeling in control is, you know, associated with the better, not just a physical outcome, but also a psychological outcome as well too. You know, because having a stoma takes time. It's a challenge and it necessitates adaption as well.
Yeah, they were really great tips to share. And Michaela, to bring you into the conversation, I know obviously we've just spoke about, like, you know, the support that you had, which is really positive. But take me back to those, I suppose, first few recovery days when Paloma was there. I love the name, by the way. Can we just say that? It's a great name. But I suppose, yeah, take me back to those first initial few days. How were you?
Yeah, it was tough because I did no pre-planning. So my ileostomy, it was elective, but I am one of these people who just goes, oh yeah, let's get on with it, be grand. The only thing I researched was what I was going to name it, because it's ridiculous. But people had said, if you name it, when it acts up, you're not speaking negatively about your own body, you're speaking negatively about a different entity. So like, even my friends now, they're like, oh, how's Paloma? So I don't have that negative connotation, which is great. But the first few days after surgery, yeah, it was very tough. the first bag they put on you post-surgery is clear. So I hadn't seen that. Any of the bags that I had seen previously were coloured, so you couldn't see through. But they had to be able to measure the output and see if it was working. So I really disliked that. The first day, the stoma nurse who came into me, who was an absolute dote, she was so lovely, came in to teach me how to change it. Like, I was allergic to looking at it. I didn't want to touch it. Like, I didn't mind it was there, didn't want to touch it, didn't want to clean it, didn't want to look at it, didn't want to do anything. I had to do it all in the end, and she was great. But yeah, it was very hard. Even I'm a devil with a sweet tooth, so you're not really meant to eat. So after surgery, the first couple of days, they give you jelly and ice cream. I don't like jelly. So I was just eating mounds and mounds of the ice cream, which made me happy. Not so great for the waistline. And then, yeah, you kind of move over to thick soup near enough. But yeah, it was sore. It was hard. I didn't like it. I have to be honest, I love Paloma now, but I really didn't like it when the bag was off and I had to do anything myself with it. And I did really struggle mentally. But the stoma nurse was brilliant. We worked through it together. And then by the time I left, I was okay with it. And then I had another stoma nurse from the community come in and she eventually made myself and Paloma pals. But it was a journey.
A massive journey. And one you were still on in many ways. Thank you for being so honest, because it's not often that you hear that raw experience of life with a stoma. Kathy, to bring you in, one question that comes up continuously is the question about the bag itself. Why are they sometimes clear in colour? And how does the bag look and feel?
That's really for the nurses and doctors so that they can, you know, can see through the bag without having to take the bag off. And that's quite important. They can see it's nice and healthy. Because when you look at pictures of a stoma, say, you know, before your surgery, you haven't seen one in real life. And obviously real life is very different than pictures and books and magazines and everything. So a stoma looks, it's no different from looking at the inside of your mouth. The whole of your GI tract is made up of the same. Inside your mouth is pale pink and moist, and that goes all the way through your intestine. So when they bring out a piece of your bowel from your large, your small intestine, it's much redder in colour because the bowel is a very good blood supply. So it looks almost what somebody described to me before was like a little red rosebud. And I thought that was a lovely expression to explain it. And I suppose even the location of it, people are not too sure, you know, sort of where in my tummy this is going to sit. But it's actually just slightly to the right or the left of your belly button so that you can see and, you know, how to locate the bag. And initially after the operation, it has to be clear for the surgeons and the doctors to see it's nice and healthy, but it means that you can see the contents as well. But once the teaching starts fairly quickly with, you know, observation in the high dependency often. And after 2 or 3 days, they can switch over to the beige brownie coloured bags.
Okay. Anthony, what advice would you have for patients on having that important chat around stomas and surgery? Like, how do you advocate for yourself and talk about it when the time is right?
So I suppose there's two scenarios, really. There's one is the very sort of urgent, emergent sort of scenario that you described. And the other is more where it's sort of a more prolonged thing where it eventually comes to a stoma over time. One thing I'm extremely keen of is getting IBD patients to meet a surgeon very early in their journey. One thing I make very clear to a patient at their first diagnosis is whether you've got ulcerative colitis or Crohn's disease, there is a significant risk that at some point in your life you're going to require surgery, okay? And that it's a disease that's treated with both medicines and surgery. And sometimes medicine is the right thing for you, and sometimes surgery is the right thing for you. And it's really important for us as teams of doctors and nurses to help patients understand that and help people get their heads around that. I suppose if I think of all the people I've ever sent for stomas of one description or another, I can't think of anybody who said it was worse than they thought it was going to be. Okay, so I've no idea what it's like to live with a stoma, and I hate it when you kind of hear people in my position say, "Oh well, it's grand, get over it, it'll be fine." You know, yeah, it won't. You're not living with it. You know what I mean? But what we do see, and where we have a benefit, and where Kathy has a benefit as well, is that we see, you know, hundreds of people over the course of a career in this situation. And we see what happens 6 months later and 12 months later, and people are actually back to living, you know, a normal quality of life. And people do actually, it's interesting there that that you named your stoma. A lot of people seem to do that. But yeah, no, it is important for people to meet the surgical team early. And certainly somebody who comes in with acute severe colitis, when I'm looking at them, I will introduce them to Larry, who's my equivalent to Kathy in our hospital, very, very early. Because I think the worst thing that you can do to a patient is, you know, oh yeah, everything's fine. Then all of a sudden, there's a stoma nurse and a surgeon coming in and a porter about to wheel you down the corridor for an operation. Now, obviously, emergencies happen sometimes. But I think a lot of the stoma surgery carry out is when people come to the end of a particular part of their journey. And I think in that case, knowing the surgeons, knowing the stoma nurse, knowing about a stoma. And as Kathy said, it's really a good idea. And I find IBD patients are quite generous with their time about this when somebody's really nervous about a stoma to say, well, would you like to talk to somebody who's got a stoma? And I find that invaluable for patients as well.
I can only imagine. Michaela, you're over a year now living with PLOMA, so I'd love to know how long the recovery really took for you, and how did that process impact your own self-esteem?
Yeah, so my situation, when I kind of talk about my recovery, I'm very like, I don't think anyone will have to go through a recovery in a situation that I had to go through ever again. So mine was that little bit more difficult because the day I left hospital was the day the country shut down. So the support that was there was quite limited because we had just entered into this whole new world. And for me, it kind of had a double whammy of it because I didn't really know what was happening when I was in hospital. So it was quite difficult. I thankfully went and recovered in my granny's because she is the best person in the world. If I get to spend time with granny, like literally that's kind of where I am with that. I'm like, it's fine. So yeah, did struggle quite a bit at the start because I wasn't fully aware of like what consistency your output should be, because that's a really big thing. There were all these things that I was trying to learn, but you know, the HSE and the doctors and nurses and stoma nurses, they were only able to advise over the phone. And I didn't know if what was happening was normal or not. And then I did experience a lot of leaks at the start as well. So that was soul destroying. I'll tell you this, there's nothing worse than when you have a leak at 3-4 o'clock in the morning. That's when mine always happened because I kind of sleep on my front. So you have to get up, you have to take your clothes off, shower. You have to try change your bag, which is still deciding to go while you're trying to shower. So you're like, this is great. Then you have to try stick another bag on, take your bed sheets off, put stain removal on them, get them in the washing machine and remake your bed. By the time you get back into bed, you're wide awake. Now, they are few and far between, I will say. But they did happen a bit at the start until I found a bag that suited me. And I think Kathy will be able to tell us more on that. Like there are so many different bags available and different bags and different barriers and creams and whatever suit different people. So for me, it was about 6 months. I was out of work for 4. I took my time because there was a pandemic. I wasn't rushing to go back. And then I went on holidays to Kerry after 6 months with 2 of my friends. And it was lovely because we knew that when I went for food, just to make sure we have around about an hour so we can have the food and then I can empty this and then we can go on our merry way. And we asked for extra linen for all the hotels we went into in case I needed to change the bed. And we had extra supplies and it was grand. Like, wouldn't even know I had it. It was so easily put into the routine and it was great. And since the summer, I've been flying with it now. But the first 6 months, yeah, like I did struggle with output and with everything, but it's got good.
That's great to hear. Kathy, I want to pick up on what Michaela said there about eventually finding a bag that fits. And that's so important, isn't it?
Yes. So that's what I just want to explain. And that's very good, Michaela, you know, sort of to say, because leaks do happen. So often when people have surgery, they lose weight. They're, you know, not doing very much. They're, you know, in bed. Then, you know, 2 or 3 weeks later, they're eating much better. They're recovering. They're moving around more. They want to get back to normal lifestyle. So the appliance or the bag that you used in the hospital may have worked and fitted then, but you're doing a lot more. You've put on a bit of weight, so you're doing more activity. And as Michaela addressed as well too, the hot weather. So the appliance is kind of like, think of it like a big sticky plaster. You know, you stick to peel off the back and the bag sticks onto your skin. So if you become hot and clammy or sweaty or you're doing more exercise, then the appliance of the bag doesn't stick as well. But, you know, there are, you know, accessories that can help with all of those sort of things to try and help that. But, you know, you may try one appliance and then weeks later you're trying a completely different appliance. And there's, you know, multiple companies out there that do stoma appliances, and you may find what worked at the beginning, you need to change, and maybe change again. And as Michaela says, yes, she found the right one that did work for her and it fits and works well for her.
Like it's a journey in itself, like, you know, getting a stoma, but like, these, like, you know, I think the message I'm getting from everybody is just take your time with it, you know, link it with your team and, you know, like ask the questions and don't be afraid to kind of fight your corner in a way.
One thing I often say to people who are about to get stomas that I find very helpful is I tell them that you almost certainly know somebody with a stoma, but you don't realize they've got a stoma because they look well, they look healthy, they're doing everything they want to be doing. They're working, they're exercising, you know, and you don't realize it, but you almost are. And a lot of averages, considering we all know a couple of thousand people between work and school, you almost certainly do. And you know, people need to know that, you know.
Am I right in thinking that if you are listening to this and, you know, you're thinking, oh, will I have surgery or will I have a stoma? There are people living with IBD throughout their entire life who've never had surgery.
Well, the majority of people with ulcerative colitis don't come to surgery.
Okay.
I mean, historically, the majority of people with Crohn's do have surgery at some point. But, you know, that's changing. I say to patients with a new diagnosis of Crohn's disease that, to the best of our knowledge, you know, the chances are more than 50% that you're going to require an operation at some point in your life, you know.
Okay. Michaela, what would you say over the past year has been your biggest lesson that you've learned about yourself during all of this process?
I think I had, to be honest, like I'm a woman in my very early 30s, I'm single. And one of my main fears with getting a stoma was the fact that I am now going to be undesirable because, like, you know, what man's going to want to be with someone who has like a bag of poop hanging from them? People don't care about that. People aren't as superficial as you may think. It's only you deflecting opinions on yourself. And I think I've learned more about other people and their kindness and how helpful other people are, or someone who knows someone who has a stoma and they chat to you. And now I've become the person who is chatting to people who have just had it or are in the process of getting it. It's a wonderful community. People do not judge you for having a bag. And if they do, they're a very, very small percentage of people who we probably wouldn't want to be pals with anyway. Stoma nurses, Kathy, like yourself, I have had to deal with so many times over the past year. And my nurse even texts me going, "Hi, Michaela, how are you? How's Paloma?" You know, you do a job that I don't think very many people can do. So the past year, what I've learned, support from everyone is just, it's phenomenal, and people will be there for you and they allow you to have the cry and say it's not fair, and they'll call your bag names with you if you want, and then you go asleep and you wake up the next day and it's okay. And I think, yeah, that's what I've learned the most is the people around me, wider community and even smaller one, has just been fab.
Yeah, I think really, really reassuring as well. And, you know, Kathy, she had mentioned your role and you, but like, what, like, when you're talking to patients, are there similarities in the patient experience? Are there questions that come up all of the time that, you know, you'd like to address or, you know, mention here today?
But there's lots of similarities, but there's only one person that you're dealing with at a time. There's only one of each of us in this world, and everybody has, you know, different stories and different lifestyles and where they're going or coming from and everything. So you always treat somebody as an individual, which is really important. There's lots of concerns, just even the profound effect of having surgery alone, but then surgery on a stoma is enormous. But as we mentioned, you know, throughout all this conversation, is for a lot of people, it can be a relief. But it's really important to address, you know, surgery, you can recover in 6 to 8 weeks. With a stoma, people have it for, you know, months, even years. And, you know, living with a stoma, there's an awful lot of things to address. And it's really important that they're addressed, you know, and I'm glad Michaela brought up sort of, you know, about dealing with relationships. And, you know, it's like having sexual intercourse. And that's a really important part too, you know, whether you're a man or a woman, it's part of our lives. And sometimes it can be left amiss, you know, but it's important that that's addressed too, about sort of recovering from surgery like this and, you know, the long-term effects. So a lot of surgery takes about 6 to 8 weeks to physically recover. You know, you're going to be sore, you're going to be tired. But it, you know, you get back to normal, it takes a while. You can't drive for 6 to 8 weeks. You can't do any heavy lifting. You can't do hoovering. And housework is heavy duty work, you know, so you need to mind your tummy. You don't want to get what we call maybe a hernia because you've got a weakened area in your tummy. So every aspect of living with the stoma has to be addressed. And as we talked about earlier, about travel, being prepared, you know, just even looking for a swimsuit, you might not wear your normal bikini, or, you know, for men, it might be more high-waisted swimming shorts, things like managing your, you know, your skincare with your stoma and, you know, all the different products that are available and how to manage accidents, you know, just and the emotional factor of it all. And body image. There's so many things to address, and it's really important. And involving a partner, sometimes even involving children and being honest with them as well too. Children sort of absorb like sponges information. And I often said to people, it's like, answer the question the child asks you and they just take it on the chin and move on with it, you know. So not to have any like little white lies and open and honest and everything as well.
That's really, really great advice, actually. I never kind of would have even thought about that. And you actually kind of just reminded me of another point because, you know, Michaela has IBD for quite some time, but in the past year, she's gotten her stoma surgery. Anthony, could you maybe shed a light on for people who are under 18 and surgery and stomas? Because even just like out of curiosity, what is the youngest you can have a stoma? And the oldest, like what is that age difference?
I only treat adults. I'm not a pediatrician. But I mean, you know, IBD wouldn't be the only indication for a stoma. And I've seen children with stoma, you know, young children with stomas in the IBD population there. I assume it's much the same. There are probably different considerations around somebody who's actually actively growing at the time. But certainly, for, you know, it's something that happens in children and it's something that we see at the very upper end of the age groups as well, you know.
Yeah. It's really interesting, actually. Yeah,
kids are absolutely fantastic, though, in how they adapt to things. They're unbelievable how good they are. Maybe they're not quite as set in their ways as us adults, but they're you know, I just remember even from sort of pediatric placements as a student, I'm sure you'd say the same, Cathy. Like, you know, kids in all sorts of situations with all sorts of devices and problems, they just adapt and get on with it so well. They're marvelous.
Yeah. My friend's son, he is 9, and he. Obviously, when everything happened to me, it was all video call, whatever. So his mom was very open with him about, oh, this is what Michaela's having and this is what it's going to do. And one day he came on the phone and he was like, Michaela, can you show me and mom all the different bits to change your bag and what order it goes in case you're ever feeling sickly and you can't do it yourself, then we can do it for you. Like, is that not like, does that not show how great kids are? Like,
yes. Oh my God. What?
But if you had said to him, will you change a dirty nappy? He'd probably say no. But with that, he was like, yeah, please show me because I want to learn and I want to learn all the different bits and why you do it. And yeah, just took in all the information and is always asking about Paloma, which I think is just, it's fab. Like, it's so good.
Yeah. And I think, but it helps the awareness as well. You know, I think if like, it's hard to talk about and we're not taken away from that because Michaela, you've gone on your journey to be able to get to that point. But I think what you're doing in creating the awareness and, you know, you're so open about it. And I'm sure that has helped massively with kind of, I suppose, processing it because I was the same. I like ripped the Band-Aid. I remember when I was diagnosed, I put it up on my Facebook and I was like, I've been in hospital. I'm not well. I'm on the way to recovery. I'm grand. But to me, that was me saying, I'm telling everybody and I'm not having these conversations with everybody going on and on and on. But it kind of, it did help me a lot to talk about it publicly from the outset. I wasn't hiding anything.
I found with a lot of the older generation in my family and whatnot, because I was quite public about my recovery post-hospital, because again, I was in lockdown, nothing else to do. And I was posting photos and, you know, updating people. And a lot of people came on the journey with me and they really learned it. But there were members of my family who were like, you shouldn't be talking about this to people. Why are you telling people you have this? And I was like, no, sorry, it doesn't. It, like, if you've got a broken arm and you're wearing a cast, you wouldn't not talk about that. Who cares if I have a bag? So there is still somewhat of a taboo around IBD, like yourself. And, you know, when it gets to the stage that you need a stoma, there is still stigma. And that stigma needs to go because we all have to go to the toilet. It doesn't matter what way.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, and I think, like, I'm weird now. Like, I love talking about poo. Like, I have no shame. I talk about it with my friends. I don't care anymore because I've learned that poo tells a really important story about your health. And the more we can talk about poo, I'm going to keep saying the word poo because we don't say it enough, but it's really, really important.
It is. It's so important. And we all do it. We all do it different ways. We need to talk about it. And I found that everyone in my life now has accepted the fact that I'll be like, oh, have you thinking about doing this? And have you got to the toilet today? Or, oh, mine is this. And you're probably the same with everyone in your life. They now know. They're like, you know what? There's no point trying not to answer her because she's going to keep asking. And yeah. I think it needs to get like that with everyone because it's a bodily function. It's fine.
Absolutely. How do you find your experience with your stoma when you go out in public, Michaela?
Oh, I'm fine. I wear, my stoma nurse told me to wear maternity jeans. And I know that sounds ridiculous because I'm not pregnant, but they are the comfiest things you can ever wear. And they keep the stoma nice and snug, gives it the support, and it's great. And look, if it fills up, I don't really care. I'll have a look down. I'm like, right, I must go to the toilet and empty that now. But yeah, and then on nights out, not that we've had very many, I just get outfits that are kind of A-lined. So if it does fill up, like no one's really going to notice it. So I can just go and empty it. I walk around with basically the ISCC toilet card stuck to my head. I hold it out, I wave it around. If people are looking at me, I'm like, do you want to read it? Do you want to read it? Because I'm like, no, I'm not explaining myself to you. I have a card. And if anyone has the brass neck to be like, what's that card about? I'll be like, oh, we can have a conversation about this. Don't worry. I've gone past the point of being ashamed about it because I'm like, you know what? We need it. Who cares? I don't judge other people using it. So why are they judging us? Just because we look very well and healthy doesn't mean we are, and we need the extra space. So I'm all about the ISCC card.
You know, the logo as well is like, not all diseases are visible. And I think the card was a fantastic thing that was introduced. And it's great that you're able to use that and access it because you look amazing. And nobody would suspect, of course, that there was anything wrong or you needed urgent access, but you do need urgent access. So it's fantastic that we have that now in Ireland.
Absolutely. And Cathy, can you tell us, you know, kind of what kind of support services or resources are available to people who've had surgery or perhaps want to find out a little bit more going forward?
Yeah, so there are the Ostomy Association of Ireland is a very good source of information, and you don't have to have a stoma to get in touch. You may be going for surgery. They also have the support groups around the Ireland available so that you can access those. So stoma support groups that are organised usually by the Stoma Care Nurses in Ireland. The other thing then is the Irish Stoma and Colorectal Nurses Association. They have all their nurses throughout Ireland, all their names, their email addresses and their telephone numbers. So if you didn't have a stoma care nurse at your own hospital, you could contact your nearest hospital that does have a stoma nurse by accessing that website, and they would guide and advise you. So your IBD nurse can be like a first point of contact just to say, look, this is a good information booklet just to look at until you get to see your stoma care nurse who will talk to you more. We have access, you know, to the pouch surgery information booklet as well, which has visuals on, you know, what the surgery is about, because it is quite a difficult surgery to explain. And then there is the IA, which is the Ileostomy and Internal Pouch Association. Good information specifically for pouch patients. The IBD nurses and the stoma care nurses would have access to the pouch booklet, which is available as well, which explains in detail and visually shows diagrams of the surgery, because it is quite, I suppose, Anthony, you'd agree with me, it's a difficult surgery to explain, and just having a visual as well in the booklet explains it a bit easier for patients about what that all is.
Thank you so much, Cathy, for that. And look, I'd like to thank all three of you for joining me on this really important and really interesting conversation and clarifying so much. And Cathy and Anthony for sharing your expertise and your knowledge on this with us. And Michaela, look, thank you so much for sharing your journey with us so open and honestly. Really much appreciated.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You have been listening to Gutcast. Wherever you get your podcasts, don't forget to subscribe, rate, and share. The views, information, or opinions expressed during the Gutcast podcast series are solely those of the individuals involved and do not represent those of the Irish Society for Colitis and Crohn's Disease or Janssen Sciences Ireland. The primary purpose of this podcast series is to educate and inform and is not a substitute for professional diagnosis or treatment. This podcast is supported by funding from Janssen Sciences Ireland.